Hello, listeners, and welcome back to the Consulting Corner podcast. As always, I'm your co-host, Kyle Varga, joined by my friend and colleague, Martin Peterson. I currently manage the consulting firm Traveling Esquire Consulting here in Copenhagen, Denmark, where we help Nordic companies expand throughout the EU into the Americas. I find great joy in helping founders and their companies get over the next hurdle to their path to success. I use my many years of experience as a California business attorney, helping startups grow in San Francisco Bay Area, to now helping companies throughout the EU expand internationally.
And I'm Martin M.D. Peterson with Way In Consulting. My greatest passion, apart from building my own company, is helping others succeed with theirs. Through Way In Consulting and my partners, I help startups and SMEs find their way into new international markets. I do this through a one-entry solution, helping you and your company save time and money. So Kyle, let's jump into the next episode. Hello, everyone. Thanks for tuning into the Consulting Corner podcast once more. This is Martin M.D. Peterson from Way In.
And I'm Kyle Varga with Traveling Esquire Consulting.
Today, we're here at not-quite-so-sunny NoHo Cafe in the Meatpacking District here in Copenhagen. But we have the pleasure of inviting in Sune Lindgaard. We're going to discuss the topic of pivoting today. I hope you guys will find it interesting. Sune used to be represents both a company called Key Butler, which has actually pivoted into what we know today as Nor Collection. So, Sune, a warm welcome, and please introduce yourself and what's been going on.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys. So, I'm Sune, and I was a co-founder of Key Butler almost 5 years ago at this point. I think the general public probably know us as Key Butler, and we still have that brand for our private customers, but now our main brand is Nor Collection. And I can just introduce, talk a little bit about the journey that we've been through and what we actually do as a company.
Perfectly.
So we started out basically renting our own apartments out on Airbnb and figured out that that it was a big hassle to travel while you rent out. So it was basically just me starting to let friends guest in and vice versa. So we kind of thought there must be some kind of product in that. And from there, we kind of just made the obvious product that would service us, basically. And at that point, that was letting in guests, what we came to call key deliveries, and cleanings of that apartment. So when we started out, it was just me for the first 2 months running around servicing the first few customers. We called it the Key Butler. So I think the first month probably I was running around every time I met guests with a butler hat, like a bowler hat, and the whole shebang. As soon as we got our first employees, the bowler hat kind of went out the window. You can't really bike around Copenhagen wearing coattails and a bowler hat.
But it's actually really interesting because, I mean, if you have relatives, like family living nearby your apartment, you probably don't give that too much thought. But, I mean, usually when you rent out your place, it's because you're going somewhere yourself, right?
Yeah.
So you're not there to greet your guests and do the whole handing over of keys and so on. So yeah,
exactly. And especially the when we started out, people were just renting out maybe once while they're on vacation, but that whole apartment sharing field has kind of broadened so much. So that would never make sense nowadays. If you're away for 1 month, all my friends is like, how can we optimize this month as much as possible?
Yeah,
right. Why don't you want those shifts between guests to go go smoothly? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how it started, just selling those one-off services, book online and say a time and a phone number for the guest, and we take care of it, kind of. I think that ran for the first few months, and then we figured out, okay, maybe we can just take over people's profiles and manage everything from there. So you're away for 3 months. Let's just take your profile, pretend like we're you, and handle everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think that went for maybe the first year, just figuring out what are the ins and outs of this product? How do we manage it? And then we started getting some attention from some investors that saw like, okay, this space is really booming. It's taking so big market shares from the people who from the hotel industry, basically. So we got a lot of attention there, and we got some really cool investors on during that. Yeah, from the first year through the second year. And the first guy we got is Trond Riber Knudsen, who's been a partner and director in McKinsey in Norway for for a lot of years. Yeah. Now he has his own investment company. We got Peter Stordalen in, who's the
hotel rockstar.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the right word. Just opening a new hotel in Copenhagen over here, actually. And I think, just like going from just running around and cleaning and having to deal with investors and like how you handle that and KPIs and being responsible for other than just where's the key and is the apartment clean,
right,
was just like a huge learning process, having to hire loads of people.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of, we got some more investors in, and that kind of went until 1.5 years ago, where our main focus, at least towards the public, was we're the company that helps private people rent out or share their their apartments. And now we're going to talk about the pivot today, of course. So that's kind of where we, during that process, we kind of figured out, alongside with, I think, all major players in this space internationally, that when you're handling private apartments, there isn't enough money in it to really grow as a startup. You don't get the benefits of just having a huge portfolio of clients, because with every new client, there's some new hassle. All apartments are different, all that. So we started getting a few smaller business clients, and we realized like that's the way to go.
Was that prompted by the fact that client acquisition was so expensive and troublesome, or the fact that the regulations of Airbnb kind of limited private clients from being able to rent for a long period of time, and commercial clients probably could rent longer? So, or was that simultaneous? Like which kind of started the push?
It's of course difficult to go back and say like what actually pushed the pivot, but I think the acquisition and troublesome, like that's that's the key.
Yeah.
That's the key part. Like every time you, like just your own apartments, there's probably at least 10 things that doesn't make immediate sense to someone else than you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, and it's not the same 10 things from each apartment.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So every time you get someone in, like a new client in, you need to be able to figure out what those are really quickly.
Yeah.
And we really tried to, and we have become really good at it. We still have a lot of private clients, but it's not like a startup or a company that you can really scale and grow, I think.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, because I mean, it sounds to me like it's a volume game, right? And I could imagine that the private market, like the Airbnb, it's totally irregular. You know, I mean, there's no distinct pattern for when private people want to rent out their apartment, or I mean,
for what length?
Exactly, right? Yeah. So I mean, it's short term. It's probably more like, okay, I'm leaving tomorrow. Can you
rent
out my place, right? So it's
exactly
it's difficult to plan,
yeah,
and it's difficult to get like a huge volume.
Of course.
Yeah. So yeah. I can understand the hassle.
So I think we kind of realized when we got the both private customers that looked a little bit like commercial customers. Mm-hmm. So there's, of course, like there's many different types of apartments you can have in Copenhagen. And for some, it's legal to rent out almost the full year.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you have something that's regulated as a summer house, but inside Copenhagen. So those kind of apartments kind of pushed us in the way of, okay, these are the guys that we're actually making money on.
Mm-hmm.
We figured out at some point that we're making 80% of our profits on 20% of our clients.
Okay.
And when that really dawned on us, and when looking back, it was like, why did we not figure that out a year earlier, right?
Yeah, because the data probably wasn't there though, right? Like, I mean,
when
the numbers weren't there, right?
The numbers weren't there. We didn't know to look for the right things in the numbers.
Okay.
Like, because of course it's easy to look at the direct cost. Like, what's a key? What does it cost to get a key to a person? What does it cost to change bed linen and all that stuff? But what you really have, and the numbers that are difficult to really grasp, is like which kind, like the issues that you get between you and the owner. Like, how do they, in when you get in a new owner, you have a lot of communication with them in the first few months.
Yeah.
Exactly. And of course, that's something as a good startup that's really been listening. That's the stuff that you need to nail and figure out pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But it's really more intangibles than we had another part of the company, like the actual cleaning, like the actual product was really easy to look at.
Yeah.
So we were so focused on like, how can we make that work?
Yeah.
And that, like, communication with the owners and all that hassle around that, that was just something that just dawned on us a little bit too late. Looking back, we should have known it earlier, at least. So we kind of that, and then knowing that regulations were on their way. So now this year they actually were enforced, so that means that now you can rent out in Copenhagen 70 days if you have a normal private home that you actually where you actually have your residence.
Can I just pitch in with something?
Yeah, of course.
It sounded like, well, I mean, I've been working with like hundreds of small and medium sized companies, and I think it's funny because you sounded a bit surprised when you say, well, we were looking at, we actually had 80% of our business from 20% of our customers, right?
Mm.
And I think that if you look at basically any small, medium-sized company in Denmark, they'll figure out the same thing.
Yeah.
So you'll have a lot of noise, basically. Mm. Like, you spend a lot of time on clients that don't really pay off.
Yeah.
So if you can do that exercise, you can really figure out, well, just like you did, well, who are our best clients? Like, what's the priority client that we should be looking for in other places, maybe?
Yeah.
So it's just it's interesting, and it's
absolutely and I think like we didn't have 80% of the, like, it wasn't 20% of our business, it was an 80% of our business, it was 20-80 on our actual profits in the end. And that, of course, like the distinction there is like, where do you actually spend your time, not where's your revenue? Because you're sitting and like, okay, so we make so many million of these 80, and we should just have thrown them out like a year ago, basically.
Yeah.
That, for us at least, it just made that exercise a little bit more difficult, that we were like, these are our bread. Yeah, like, we live out of these guys, right?
Real quick, you're focusing on that. Like, so analyzing the like hard fixed cost versus like the more soft cost, right? Like, do you have any like pointers or anything of how to... He said you wish you would have been, had that, you know, magnifying glass a year earlier, right? So any tips to like, how do you expedite that process of saying, you know, how do I find that crux and then maybe pivot earlier than later?
I think what really, like, when we made the exercise of like, which customers do we need to say, not throw out, that's, but like,
redirect your energy.
Yes, exactly. And say, you can go and be with some of our smaller competitors.
Right.
What really made the change, and when we started to actually figure out that we like which ones we should choose to throw out, was when we tried to analyze them, not just with numbers, but like talking to the guys that were sitting having the everyday talk with them, and being like, these few customers are people that we'd not just spend a lot of mails on, like that, though, like how many mails and how many calls, that's something that you can record, right? But then when you get a call in from someone who's like threatening to sue you because he doesn't think that a 2-hour cleaning looks like that, all that energy that comes to an office when someone has been yelled at in the phone, those were the big costs for us. When we started having, and then we just went through all of our clients together in the office with the guys sitting with them, and being like, every time I talk with this person, I feel happy, even though something went wrong. It was like, we figured it out and we got on, and they're They understand our company. They understand the product that they're getting. But every time I talk with this person, he or she doesn't seem to really understand what we're trying to deliver. Yeah. And I get like a downer feeling every time I've been on the phone.
Yeah.
And that was like the key thing. So there's a lot of stuff you can't really measure there. Yeah.
So a lot of internal communication is necessary.
From
top down to make sure how is everyone feeling about the interactions as it goes through.
Exactly.
Yeah. And probably personal client or personal houses are probably more demanding than commercial, right? Because they want it to be just how they left it, right? Mm-hmm. And then the commercial people understand this is a commercial space. And as long as it looks uniformed, then we don't really care.
Exactly.
It's livable.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah, that, I could see that.
Actually having those deep talks around every single of our clients were like what really made us able to push some out and keep some.
Yeah, makes sense.
The pivot it kind of started almost like 2 years ago when we kind of realized this is the direction that we're going now. And so what we pivot into is basically the hotel business. Mm. So it's the business that we kind of together with or alongside Airbnb thought that we were gonna disrupt and like make this new sharing thing that's gonna completely blow them out of the water. So now we manage and own our own hotels. So we don't own the actual building, but either we rent the building or we make a long-term management lease together with the owner. So the way we go about it is we basically find buildings that should be refurbished, mm-hmm. not necessarily are right now, and contact the owner and figure out like what if we made this into an apartment hotel.
Mm-hmm. So commercial buildings, right?
Commercial buildings. Okay, yeah. Yeah, exactly. So.
Which requires less regulation too, right? That's probably
you're not allowed to run like to rent out more than 70 days if it's not a commercial building.
Yeah.
Unless it's a summer house, which is just a like really minuscule part of the building.
Commercial mass, obviously unlimited.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But you of course need to have the permits in terms of being like this is a hotel.
Up to regulation.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So we find these buildings. Together with the owners, we develop like how we should rebuild it so it fits as a hotel, and then we run it as automated apartment hotel as you can get to at this point. So we've kind of, because we've come from this sharing apartments all over the city, we've kind of been forced to innovate some stuff that the conventional hotels haven't really done yet. So we don't have any reception. Everything is automated around check-in. We have a concierge department that's sitting in Manila and like ordering taxis, booking restaurants, all of that stuff.
That's awesome. Yeah.
And that's kind of, for example, just the thing like when you're renting on Airbnb, you expect that when you write your host, there's like almost an instant response. You know that they're getting an SMS and they will just write you back, or you're calling a private person, you know they will always pick up, right? But if, let's say that you're emailing a hotel, you don't expect a response back in 3 minutes.
No.
We always give a response in 3 minutes.
Wow.
And that's something that where we're providing, even though we don't have a reception, we feel that we're still providing better service, like a better reception service than many hotels in Copenhagen.
Mm-hmm.
And our right now we have two apartment hotels in Copenhagen. We are opening a new one in hopefully within 2019. We're building the space right now. And one of them is the best rated at all on booking.com. And the other one, I believe, is in top six or seven, so it's just it's nice. Jumping every day where we are. But and I think it is the main reasons are because we learned some things that the hotel has never been forced to learn.
Mm-hmm.
We've been pushed into a like how do you make a really well functioning concierge service without having the physical space.
Yeah.
And of course, for a lot of tourists, what they want is they want to be able to go down and talk with something or someone in a reception, right? But for many tourists, people just like, they want to have the comforts of having a whole apartment, mm-hmm. like on Airbnb, mm-hmm. but they want to know that if something goes wrong, there's someone who can fix it. If you need extra towels at 4 o'clock in the night, you just call us and we'll bus you into the place where the extra towels are. You can basically get all the stuff that a reception can get. Mm-hmm. And if it's in the middle of the night, you might need to go down one flight of stairs to get it.
But it's on site. Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
Like if your coffee machine breaks down, there's an extra coffee machine for you within 3 minutes.
What do you do for like big problem fixes? So like internet, the whole internet in the building goes out or water goes out, right? Then you guys, obviously multiple people are going to be calling and complaining, and then you just could get like an external fixed person to come in and just fix the problem.
Yeah. So we of course have deals with contractors on all of that. Cool. That knows the buildings. So let's say the internet go down, we can fix it just as fast as a conventional hotel, right?
Yeah.
Maybe even faster, because the night concierge as a regular hotel doesn't know anything about the internet.
Yeah.
But our concierge service actually can go in, sit from Manila, go in to see what's wrong. Is it just that router that's down? Is it the whole building that's down? And just, okay, I'll just lock you on to something else or call the guys who say they're going to fix it.
Okay. I actually came up with a question. This isn't to put you on the spot, but maybe you have an idea already. So you kind of working now with two separate business models, right? So you have the property management and then also getting into your own owning hotels or running, managing or leasing hotels, but running them as your own.
Yeah.
So and prospect of, 5-10 years down the road, do you think which one might be more lucrative if you were to put your eggs in one basket? Do you think one's better for your business model, or is it kind of too early to tell?
Managing and renting our own hotels.
That's the one you want to do.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It's already more lucrative.
Okay. Yeah. Lucrative and easier to control, probably too, right? Because you do everything from top to the bottom rather than some middle section.
And we're able to, of course, give a lot better project, like a product to the guests.
Okay. Yeah.
And I think that's also that doesn't reflect really on the bottom line necessarily, but it really reflects on the life that you have as an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
That like our hotels are pretty high end, and selling something like that to guests is just a much better feeling, where we get 10 out of 10 on all of our guests on booking.com, right? That was not the case before when we had like, your apartments are probably nice and clean, right?
Yeah.
But sometimes we have customers where they're like, there's something wrong with this sink. There's like all these issues, right?
Yeah.
And just having a product that you control and that's really good is just a much nicer feeling.
Yeah.
That's an amazing feeling when we've really been struggling with clients, especially in the start. Really. I would never rent this out myself, but I need these customers. Like my KPIs say that I need to get these guys in. So that's been
that's the control. Feeling. I think you nailed it. It's you have more control over the whole entire process, and you can tailor it the way you want to.
Exactly.
Yeah, I agree.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. But just to get something straight for me, do you lease existing hotels as well?
No.
It's turning commercial buildings into your type of apartment hotels, right?
At least that's where we are now. So because we've been coming from the Airbnb side, where you always lease like a full apartment mm-hmm. with a kitchen, we don't really... We want to build those kind of units because those are the kind of units that we've been using 5 years really understanding.
Yeah.
If we sit here again in a year, we might have a hotel where there's also just like simple rooms.
Okay.
I wouldn't say that that's not happening at all. But we want to try and focus on that part. We also think like when right now there's being built so many hotels in Copenhagen, like the number of beds within the next few years compared to 2 years ago is like raising with 50%. Wow. So it has been kind of standing still for many years, and now there's just a big boom.
Yep.
So we really want to focus on this specific part that not a lot of other companies are doing, and we want to focus on buildings that are less than 3,000 square meters. Because if you go to one of the big hotel chains, they say, like, we're not going to touch a building that's that small, because it doesn't work together with having a reception.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work with all of these
the full-time
fixed
staff.
Costs that they've been accumulating over being in this business for 100 years, and like, okay, we need a reception. We need
like 5 maids. We need someone to run the pool. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Where our the staff that we are because we've been coming from that, having apartments all over the place, it's not one person being at one spot. Like they're used to driving around on Christiania bikes in Copenhagen with bed linen. So
yeah.
I think we're much more, we're able to give them much more just utilize their work day a lot better. Like a standard in the hotel business is you're hired to work for 4 hours, like between check-in and check-out, and you're guaranteed that pay, but you have to stay for the next 4 hours if there's something to do, right? Where we give people like a workday that looks much more like a workday that people actually want, like 8 hours of work, and then you can go home.
Yeah.
And that's because we're able to use them in between our different sets.
Okay.
Okay, so we're reaching somewhat the end of the session. But what we usually do is we ask our guests to come up with like 3 what we call crucial considerations. So when talking about pivoting your business, I mean, do you have some three pieces of advice for our listeners on what to be aware of, or just is it like, because I could imagine that some people would look at it as a failure if you have to move away from your original business model and then do something else. I mean, what's your take? Do you have some advice for people who are facing
it? Yeah, I think the first one would definitely be make it like really client-centric. Like, look at what clients is it that you want, and not necessarily what does your product fit, but like, do you have some clients that are better than others? And maybe that will, maybe it's just one client that's better than your other 10,000.
Mm-hmm.
But if that client works, then make that be like the direction of your pivot.
Okay.
Instead of just looking out and, okay, now we randomly build this product and we could also take it over here.
Yeah.
I think that would definitely be one. A second one, and I don't, that's also related to pivoting, but more related to just like being in this funding game and getting new funding rounds and all that. It's just like the agreement that you make with your investors and the KPIs that you set out to, like, make sure to reevaluate those and do it like internally really often, and don't be afraid to go back to your investor and say, like, what we together agreed upon we should move towards is not the right thing.
Yeah. So I guess that's basically the key of pivoting, right? I mean, it's being open to having made the wrong decision initially and maybe set out the wrong strategy or the wrong KPIs and saying, well, if we want to make this like a profitable business, we need to change something.
And don't throw good money after bad, right?
I mean, Yes. Don't be afraid to sticking too much to what you promised people. They want to know that you should go another way.
Right. Anything else they last like? And it doesn't have to be pivoting centric.
No. I think culture of your company being ready to change that as well.
Mm.
We've had probably overall like three distinct different cultures throughout the time we had the company. And some of them work for some faces, some of them work for others, but don't set like an idea of like, this is how our company should work and it's always how it should work. Yeah. Like at some point it was very much centered about lean startup, and that's not what it is about anymore.
Yeah.
And like being able to jump away from that culture is just super important.
Yeah. So being flexible in, yeah. in many areas.
In many, many business. Areas. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
open mind.
Cool. Okay, Sune, thanks a lot for stopping by. It was really interesting, and we hope that you listeners enjoyed it as well.
Yeah, what an awesome journey, and good luck in the future.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Take care. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. We hope you found the information useful for you and your company. If you have any questions or comments, please reach out to us on Twitter. I'm at MD Martin and Kyle is at Traveling ESQ. Remember to subscribe to the Consulting Corner podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and stay tuned for upcoming episodes.